Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Right here in Duval, a little bit chilly perhaps for some of you. I bet the blue-collar workers around the city absolutely loved it today. Humidity gone, not much wind. And again, in a perfect world, I'd like it to be about 10 degrees warmer, but who am I to complain? Sun is shining. Things are good as we move into the night. It's our late-night edition each and every Tuesday right here on your home of the Jaguars. Tomorrow night, Thursday night, Friday night, we'll be back at it 6 to 8, including Thursday night's show. Mr. Chubby's Wings out in Fleming Island. Looking forward to heading out there. Always a lot of good people out there whenever we make that particular track, and that'll be the case coming up on Thursday. Tomorrow night, with that said, an awful lot on some college hoops. All right, including the return of the Philly Rooster, who we have not heard from since right before the Super Bowl. All right, the Philly Rooster with us each and every week during the college and pro football season, but he has always maintained that college basketball is his. That is where he earns most of his money. That is where he is the great handicapper that he is. So we'll bring him on tomorrow night. We'll talk about the Gators. Still don't know who the Gators are going to face. Of course, we have a couple of playing games tonight, tomorrow as well. And we'll keep you updated on everything. But, you know, top four seeds, all lost. It's in my opinion, you know, the game today is much more for the front of the jersey than it is the back of the jersey. We have just seen that with one and done and the transfer portal. It's hard to really identify with a lot of these basketball players on a year-to-year basis. That's just the way sports are now, collegiately speaking, and it's not going to end. At least it's not anytime soon. We got a whole bunch to get into as far as collegiate athletics, including college football, a little bit later on the program, the latest on ESPN and the college football playoff agreement. Clemson screaming now. They want out. They're not getting any of the haste, if you will, or taking any of the negativity that Florida State did. Florida State took all the punches, and deservedly so. They created a lot of that on their own with their bot and the way that they handled it. But we've kind of gone through all of that, right? Now Clemson is adding their name to the list. Not a surprise. I would expect more to come. What does that mean, though, overall for college football with everything settling into the Big Ten and the SEC? Do you realize the only two teams, if Clemson and Florida State, since there was a college football playoff in 2015, January of 2015, the 2014 regular season, ever since there was a college football playoff, if Florida State and Clemson, who are the only two from the ACC to make the playoff, left and joined either the Big Ten or the SEC, that would only leave two schools right now in America not in either one of those two power conferences. Are you ready for this? Cincinnati and TCU. That's it. They've all left the Big 12 outside of those schools. And it's frightening, but that's where we are. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the program. So it's good to have you with us. My name is Rick Ballew. Again, with you 6 to 8 every night except for this evening here on Tuesday alongside J.J. LaSelva. I got a few Jags things I want to get out. I think you'll enjoy it. I got a couple of other things that, one on golf and one on football, which I'm going to get to in just a little bit. But I want to say this. I don't talk hockey often. And I don't talk hockey often because I think I have a pretty good understanding of our audience, right? There are some snowbirds. There's some people from other parts of the country who love the game. And once you get that running through your artery and veins, you can never, it'll never escape. Okay? hockey is a tremendous game. It's not as good as it once was, but then again, I think we could say that about any sport. I just told you about college basketball. I mean, the talent level is not there. They don't do simple things in basketball anymore. You know, you don't see a bounce pass anymore. You don't see three, four guys get the ball. It's pull up, three-on-ones, take three-pointers. All right, maybe that's a little bit more within the NBA as opposed to college basketball. But no one's going to argue with my point. The game was so much better in the 80s and the 90s and with the turn of the millennium. It was just a better sport. You brought guys back. They became sophomores, juniors, some even seniors. You identified with them. They played 25, 50, 75, 100 games together. I mean, when I started covering this in the early 90s, do you realize Duke rolled in with Thomas Hill, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, everyone's favorite New Jersey gym rat, Bobby Hurley, and they stayed and they stayed and they stayed and they stayed. Same era, Tim Duncan played all 4 years at Wake Forest. Can you imagine Tim Duncan coming out now? He'd be a one and done. I watched Joe Smith, the top pick in the draft with Maryland, and Maryland had a really good team. This was back when Maryland was in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And, you know, the North Carolina teams, where you had Stackhouse and Rasheed Wallace and Jerry Stackhouse, and then they left, and, you know, they go down the road to Daytona Beach, and they get Vince Carter, and they get Antoine Jameson. It was, even those Florida State teams, you know, with Sammy Cassell and Bob Sura and Charlie Ward and Douglas Edwards, and there was something special about that. Gator teams that won it in 06 and 08. You brought all those players back. And anyway, that was then, this is now, it all changes. Hockey is still a great game. It's not the game it once was for so many different reasons. And I want to recognize as we get things started today, I was really saddened by this. And I did see it while I was out golfing, as I do just about every shot. I check my phone for the very latest that's happening in the world of sports. But, you know, what I did see, and I guess it technically happened very late last night, the passing of Chris Simon, it just set me back. Chris Simon was truly one of the last enforcers in the National Hockey League. Okay? He had one role and one role only, and that was to fight guys on other teams. And he had some unbelievable battles over the years. And you know, this sport has changed so significantly that they really did everything that they could to eliminate fighting. And in my opinion, it's a mistake. It's a mistake because I've always been under the belief that you're really not going to hurt yourself hand to face. You are going to hurt yourself when you pile drive a guy into the boards. You are going to hurt yourself when you use a stick as a weapon. You are going to hurt yourself if you take a guy and face plant him into the ice. That is far more significant, far more dangerous than, again, hands to face. But they eliminated all of that. Bench clearing brawls. I mean, back in the 60s and the 70s, go back and watch it on YouTube. It's really incredible if you were to really settle in and watch the way that the Big Bad Bruins were, the Broad Street Bullies were, the old Blackhawks, the old Rangers, the Montreal Canadiens. Not only could those guys play, shoot and score and skate, they defended themselves. They fought. That was part of it. That was like checking the box. It was very rare to have a Wayne Gretzky. All right? There were some back then. I look at a guy like Phil Esposito. He never fought, but very few and far between. The greatest hockey players of that era fought, right? Bobby Orr fought. Gordie Howe fought. Rocket Richard fought. Bobby Hull fought. The great players back then, that was part of the game. You have to be a tough guy. But the enforcer role came on probably a decade later when they said, all right, we don't want our best players to fight any longer. We want to have guys who are on our fourth line. Back then, you would play prominently three lines. Today, you're playing four lines. And we've seen this explosion from Finland and Russia and Sweden. And, you know, it's this finesse style of hockey, you know. We're going to put your glove in the face after the whistle blows. But it's not the taking liberties at one another legally with hard hip checks, hard checks up against the boards, whatever it would be. We're seeing less and less and less of that. We're still seeing the dirty stuff because you don't have the quote-unquote enforcers on the ice who are able to protect the stars. But Chris Simon, man, he was with the Quebec Nordiques. I remember him in Colorado with the Avalanche. I remember him with the Chicago Blackhawks. Absolutely with the Washington Capitals. I remember him with a couple of different New York teams. He was out on the island. He was with the Rangers. That was his job. It's almost like a Major League Baseball team going out and getting a left-handed reliever that you could rely upon in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. Back when baseball was a different game. If starters gave you six innings, it was like, what happened, right? Remember back when baseball, you're going to get everything you can out of your five starters, and you absolutely expect them to carry you at least into the seventh inning. Then you go get a guy like a Tony Fossis, or wherever it would be, and say, can you get us one out? We got a left-handed guy coming to the plate. Let's get him out of the pen. And, you know, you'd flip the back and look at his baseball card, and you'd see that he'd have, like, you know, 91 games, and he would have thrown, like, 52 innings because that was the role. And it still happens to some extent. I mean, just look at baseball today. Today is different only because you get so deep into pens. We were looking at that Florida State-Florida game last Tuesday night. I think Florida used 10 pitchers in that loss. Florida State used six. I mean, the game has changed, but it was different then. You truly did have left-hand specialists. That's where Chris Simon was in the NHL. He was signed to fight. He was signed to protect. If you were down 3-1, you were down 4-1, and you needed to try to fire up the crowd and fire up the team, his role was simple. Go out on the ice and fight. And imagine that being your job. Imagine going city to city. You know, he fought Ty Domi. He fought Rob Probert. Probert left us way too early. Now, Probert had massive problems, cocaine problems. He had other issues. He was a wild partier. He was also somewhat of a skilled guy, but he was still, you know, in everyone's category of a goon. That was Bobby, who was just fantastic. Maybe the greatest fighter to ever play in the NHL. But I saw this today, and I was like, no, come on. He's only 52. Chris Simon, dead. At the age of 52. So, you know, I was just looking it up because there's been a whole bunch of them that have died recently, way before their time. Okay. Derek Beauregard died at 28. Consummate hockey fans absolutely remember the Boogeyman and what he was about when he was asked to go on out and fight. Wade Bellick died just a couple of years ago. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of these fighters who that was their role. And, you know, they've done studies. Now, a report came out, you know, not too long ago that those who fight in the National Hockey League compared to those who do not fight die 10 years earlier on average. I don't know exactly how they came up with this survey, how many fights per year, or how many fights in a career. So it does beg the question and goes against what I said previously. Maybe if these guys are getting smacked around, you know, in their squash time and again and time and again, there isn't a factor and they are going to end up dying. I haven't looked at it boxing wise. I would have to think it would be up in that sport. Certainly premature deaths in wrestling have always been up. I mean, it seems like we can't go a month here without a prominent former wrestler dying. Now, that's a little bit different because they were enormous, and who knows what they put into their body, not only steroids, but so many other things that they did to just maintain not only the way that they looked, but when you go behind the scenes in wrestling, man, it's so dark when you hear about the drug abuse and the alcoholism. And, you know, even when you see it, and I'm out of the wrestling game right now, you know, it's almost like I'm an addict with wrestling. It pulls me back in, then I leave. It pulls me back in, and then I leave. I actually want to see that new movie that's out. It's on the Von Erichs. I don't know if you've seen the trailer yet. JJ on the Von Erich family, where, you know, all the kids, I want to say three of the four kids died. Kerry Von Erich, Kevin Von Erich, there was a suicide. There were other issues. I believe Kevin Von Erich is still alive, but I did see the trailer for it recently, and I'm looking forward to going ahead and checking that out. But we see the fights that used to be Monday Night Raw, right? Or the WWF or WWM Monday Night, right? And it's in a big arena and sold out. What you don't see and you don't know, unless you're really a wrestling fan, is these house shows that they do tonight and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, and they're going from town to town. First time I ever saw Andre the Giant was right outside of Boston. It was in a place called Western Massachusetts. It was at a high school gym. It was probably 1,500 people in there. And it was Andre the Giant fighting one of these Samoans. I don't know if it was Aka or Sika Samoan, but it was a house show. And when you would think of a guy like Andre the Giant, you would think only, you know, only the gold here, only the platinum, only the biggest of everything he is going to get. Yeah, you got to pay your dues in that sport. So we've seen that happen as well. I don't want to spend much more time. I know this is boring to some of you that are non-hockey fans, but Chris Simon deserves a little bit of attention. I have a feeling he's probably not getting any in the state of Florida today. Maybe a taste in Tampa. Maybe a taste in Miami. Hopefully that is the situation. But these fighters, man, these gladiators, they're dying way, way too soon. And there's a long list of these players that have gone before their time. So anyway, rest in peace. I enjoyed your career, brother. It was fun. It really was. He was a big guy. I mean, he was 6'4", 232. He was a legitimate heavyweight. And, you know, that was his role. And it created a great life. I mean, let's see. Let me pull it up here. Quebec, Colorado, Chicago, Washington, both New York teams, Calgary, the Minnesota Wild. And then he went over the pond a couple of different places. Was actually drafted by Philadelphia in 1990. Never played a game with the Flyers. But, you know, he played for nine different NHL organizations. And he did it because he was a guy that could defend the best players on the team with his fists. All right, coming up, want to switch things up and get to the Jaguars. I can't believe I've actually done 15 minutes of radio and I haven't mentioned the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, after all, it's the 19th day of March. What in the hell's wrong with you, Blue? Yesterday was a lot of fun to kind of take you through the Eric Armstead Zoom chat with local members of the media. And now I'm starting to get free agent rankings, right? 1 week after free agency. I'm not a huge fan of lists and rankings. Never really have been. Outside of the obvious, outside of the, you know, college football top 25 and things like that. We don't do power rankings around here and stuff like that. And I've always thought that lists can be plentiful. They can be good under some sort of circumstances, but they're so damn subjective. And it also feels like a lot of people who come forward with these lists, you're like, who are they? Where's their credibility? I guess the point I'm trying to make is anyone can create a list. I do think that there's some sort of laziness involved in what I do if I line up a show by discussing someone else's list. You follow my plan here? It's almost like, oh, wow, they did all the work. They created the list. Let's argue with them. Let's critique it. Let's tell them they don't know what they're talking. You know, it's kind of like the easy way out. So I try to avoid lists here and there. But the free agency rankings, 1 week after it has begun, I do think is intriguing. So I'll also tell you that as a host, a talk show host, you always have to be a hypocrite. And this is a great example of that. I'm going to go down that road a little bit here tonight. We're going to go to the beloved. I mean, they never do anything wrong, right? Or they never do anything right, wrong? What is it? You tell me. I'm talking about Pro Football Focus. Who knows what in the hell goes into their particular rankings? Because I still don't know how they come up with whatever it is that they come up with. It's so self-serving. Right, when Darius Williams is the fourth best corner all year against the pass, those who knew he was going to be cut will say, Pro Football Focus, they suck. They don't know what they're talking about. Darius Williams, I mean, the guy's 5'2". He can't cover. They don't. But then if that same Pro Football Focus comes out and says, not one Jaguars offensive lineman had a grade over 70, people are like, that's the truth, man. Pro Football Focus. And we love you. Your stuff's impeccable. It's so accurate. We agree. So I don't know what to make of it. And I give you that disclaimer every time I go to them. But I find myself once again going to them, whether it's right or wrong, whether you agree or disagree. Pro Football Focus is something that... That I use. I would love a rival. JJ, you mentioned that a few weeks ago. I would love someone else to come out and say, okay, here we go. Here's the new Pro Football Focus. I mean, we've got 9,000 different draft analysts and mock drafts and so-called scouts or whatever their title is. There's so much football material that's out there, even a lot of really good stuff that may be more difficult to hide because they're not as popular as others and don't get enough attention or their marketing is not where you would think it would be. I mean, the NFL stuff's all over the place, but why is it we don't have a rival for Pro Football Focus? Or if we do, I'm not aware of it. I mean, ESPN has their product, right? Sports Info Solutions. I've certainly looked at that, and analytically speaking, just about every team, and maybe that is the case, that every team in the NFL now uses analytics to come up with things. We know that Tony Khan has headed up that operation here since his dad took over ownership of the Jaguars. But I do want to get to that coming up here on the other side and then also give you an opportunity to give us your response and then answer a question as we draw one day closer to the NFL draft, and that is what worries you most. I mean, this is a better football team right now than the team that lost 5 of 6. It's a better football team than the one who bowed out against Tennessee. And remember that Tennessee team. Remember what they did to Jacksonville, the fear they put in Jacksonville, how soft they made Jacksonville. Jacksonville couldn't, it didn't even attempt to run the ball on 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1. From the goal line. They couldn't line up and run it and go right at them. No. They tried razzle-dazzles and passes, and they couldn't do it. 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1. Season on the brink. This football team abandoned it. They jumped ship. They said, no way are we going to try to pick up a yard on the ground against Tennessee. So, my opinion is going to remain the same. I'm still nervous about this offensive line. Even if you walked it back, even if you added Mitch Morse, I still have major concerns with the game on the line. Can this team pick up a first down? Can this team get into the ditch and play with other teams? I'll give you that opportunity to voice your opinion on what it is that worries you the most. I feel like the last couple of weeks here, all we've done is brag about the Jaguars and the moves that they have made. It's been a good offseason, in my opinion, for Trent Baalke. And I'm hoping it's a good NFL draft coming up in just over 1 month. But we'll get into that coming up tonight as well, right here on into the night. All right, comments tonight brought to you by Shmunez Vision. Why Shmunez Vision? Well, it's all about trust, okay? And it's all about my eyes. And it should be about your eyes. You only have one set of them. And it's just amazing how, at times, we don't treat them the way that they should be treated, right? Sleeping in your contacts. You know it's bad, but you do it anyway, whether you pass out because of booze or you're just too lazy to get out of the rack and take them out. And then the next day you get up and you're blurry and, you know, you can't see. You try to get the contacts out and they're kind of like submerged and stuck to your eye. That's not good, okay? That's anything but. That's one thing you should never do. But it's so much more than just going to Shmunez Vision for a normal eye examination, getting the very latest as far as a prescription for your contacts or your glasses. I'm talking about real serious scenarios, like cataract, right? Cataract surgery, absolutely. They've been doing that for more than 30 years. Heck, you may not need surgery. There may be another remedy that they have for you where it is avoidable. When it comes to surgery, though, they are the best, and that included doing surgery on my right eye 8.5 years ago with Dr. Neil Shmunez. What I want you to do is look at them online. That is Shmunez Vision. They're right out there at Ponte Vedra Beach. Unbelievable family practice, and I swear by it because they're that good. I want you to trust them as well. Look at them online. Just go to Shmunez Vision. Care you can see. All right, when we come back, let's bring in our good buddy J.J. LaSelva. Want to take a look at some early Jaguar returns from free agency and then ask you that question at 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. What worries you most right now about this team? I mean, all 32 teams have holes. What's the biggest hole for you after the first week of free agency? For me, it's very simple, but I want to hear from you. 641-1010. That is the best way to do it, and that is brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Little rumor that the Phillips Highway Stroll is going away in a couple of Tuesdays. That's all I'm going to tell you. Now, what you got to ask yourself is, has this been forced upon me by a 1010XL enforcer? Or is it on our own doing?
This is actually the last Highway Stroll.
What about next Tuesday?
It's an early show for you next Tuesday.
Well, in that case, let it run.
So for the rest of the show, we'll just have this.
An early one? I thought that we had one more Tuesday.
No.
In the month of April.
You're doing afternoons next week because of some vacations.
I'm doing afternoons.
You are.
Oh.
I didn't realize I was the first to let you know. How hilarious is that?
Wasn't aware of that. Okay. I mean, I know the schedule came out today. I didn't really look at it.
I see.
We got this week's schedule. Interesting. Okay. All week, 3 to 6. Didn't know that. Glad you told me that. I didn't even. So this is it. So what you just heard was the official. Let's play it one more time because this will be the last ever Phillips Highway Stroll. It's been fun, ladies, and I feel like I've been the eye in the sky. I feel like I've done everything that I possibly can to look out for you
and for the Johns.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to watch you get pinched, although I want to be a fly on the wall to hear you explain that to your wife or your girlfriend. So there she goes, just like that. That is the end. How you doing tonight, JJ? You all
I'm
right?
I'm great. We got baseball starting in like
it's nuts.
9 hours, maybe. I got my alarm set, 6 a.m. I took a nice long nap today. I'm excited. I know it's like, okay, it's not opening day, and they're just playing two random games in Korea, and then opening day isn't for a week. But to me, I don't care. It's real-life baseball. I don't watch spring training. I don't watch any preseason. I do for the Jags just because I'm here for work. But, like, it's close enough to April. I'm loving it. Dodgers, Padres, by the way.
Mm-hmm. You familiar with Chris Sinem at all?
You know, I had to Google him when you were talking about him. I saw that he unfortunately did commit suicide. I saw that earlier today, but I wasn't aware of like who he was. But then I Googled him and I saw the hair and I instantly was like, oh yeah, I remember that dude. And then I looked at his CV and like, wow, he's played for everyone. Like literally 10 teams in the NHL or something like that. But then after that, he had like another 6 or 7 years in like Russian league. Before that, he played for some, you know, Edmonton minor league. He did have 29 goals 1 year in the NHL.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is a lot for a goon.
I hope they open the, I hope they open the brain here. And because this, the whole CTE issue is so important. And, you know, we see suicide with former players. I mean, we start with Junior Seau.
All the time.
Crying out loud. And
literally another hockey player today.
I know. I know.
Konstantin Koltsov.
Was that the one who was...
He was dating a tennis player.
Yeah, I read that. She's like the number 2 ranked tennis player in the world.
And he was only 42 years old.
It's really disturbing to me. And you know, the Aaron Hernandez brain is one of the most... I don't know what word I can use to describe that. I want to say remarkable because he was a murderer, okay? But his brain, the CTE in his brain, I'm not saying it's justifiable, okay? I don't want to come out and say that. But it's obvious that there were major, massive issues. And go back to Dave Durison, part of that great Bears team and that Bears defense from the mid-'80s. And... yeah, I don't know if they open up the brain of Junior Seau, but I say this so they can get a better understanding, right? So you can get a better feel for it. I mean, some of the words that came out of the combine recently was talking once again in the NFL about going to an 18-game regular season schedule, which is nothing more than flat greed. That's it. I mean, when you're talking about an 18-game schedule, don't turn around and tell me you care about the player's well-being. You care about CTE. You care about concussion. You don't. You care about lining your own pockets. You care about making more money. And I know when I say something like this, most of you out there are like, jam it, Baloo. You're trying to tell me we're going to have an extra Sunday of football? I'll take it. And I get it. You love the bye going from 2 teams to 1. You love the addition of the wild card weekend. More games because of it. 16 to 17 games. I get it. You're a consumer. Our custodial engineer just a couple of moments ago was talking to me. He's like, I can't wait for September to get here. And I'm like, come on, man. Enjoy March. Enjoy April. Enjoy the offseason. There's some great things happening, man. I mean, September's going to get here.
How about the players this weekend?
Yes. But.
Got the Masters in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Chris Sinem, I don't know enough about him. You know, post-playing days. I don't know enough. I don't know if he lost his family. I don't know if he has an issue with alcohol. I don't know. But there all of a sudden is becoming. It's all been about the hits and the concussions in the NFL. There's now been at least 10 to 12 to 15 years of example after example after example of hockey players who were fighters, who were goons, who were henchmen, who punched and got punched, have all of a sudden died long before normal hockey players. I guess the only good news about this, there really isn't that role anymore in today's NHL. But what I don't know is that if taking a shot, even with a helmet on, against the glass or into the boards, How much more significant is that with the helmet off and you taking, you know, four fingers and a thumb to your skull? I don't know. But I hope they're doing some work on this. You know, JJ, I'm sure you hear it. I hear it. I talk to dads and I talk to moms, and it's almost like the majority of them are thrilled that their son does not want to play football.
That would be me.
Yes.
I mean, I just got married less than a year ago. This is something that me and my wife talk about, you know, if we have a son or whatever, would we let him play football, or what do we want him to play? Or I'm always saying he'll be a left-handed reliever, you know. That's probably the fastest track to a college education. But, yeah, there's no way I'm letting my kid play football.
No.
Absolutely no way.
I don't blame you.
The upside is not enough, you know, like, especially with my genetics. You know, he's not going to be a big fella. So what can he possibly achieve playing football? I mean, I guess it's terrible for me to look at it in a way like that. Like, can he get a college education? But yeah, the injuries, and not even like just the head injuries, just like, you know, breaking your arm, breaking your leg. Like,
oh, yeah,
that doesn't happen when you play baseball.
No,
you know?
Very rarely. Unless you get hit by a pitch. I'm with you. I am in full support of that. I absolutely am.
I love the game.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's not like
I want it to go away. I'm just saying, as on a personal level, yeah, I would rather my son not play that.
It's not worth having your brain scrambled. It's just not. And, you know, what football taught me and what it taught most of us out there is how to be a great teammate. Right? It's the ultimate team sport. Whether you're starting, you're on the bench, you're a good teammate. It taught you how to lose. It taught you how to deal with losing, right? Hopefully you won a lot, but absolutely everyone who played also lost. So you learned about that, and you learned about sacrifice, about doing things and giving things up that maybe your buddies in high school were able to do, you couldn't do because you were on the football team, whether you played or you didn't play. Like, maybe you didn't play as a sophomore. You finally got to play a little bit as a junior, or, you know, then you played as a senior. But that whole process of learning, if I could do it all over again, I never would have played football. I would have played just hockey and baseball. Too much, in my opinion, two way better sports. Far more enjoyable. Have you ever met a human being alive who says the following? Oh, I can't wait for football practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Football practice, I mean, that's going to be, I can tell you right now, baseball practice was a joy. We were really good.
Hell yeah, batting practice.
Our coach used to let us out there with shorts and no shirts, shagging fly balls and taking BP. Now, we had to run. Hockey practice is fun if you're allowed to shoot the puck. I tell you, when you lose and they skate you, that's no fun. But what was ever fun about football practice? I mean, honestly, especially where I played, where it was absolutely freezing. There was nothing fun. You might have had a couple of guys who, you know, whose screws were loose, who, oh, I can't wait to get out. We're going to do our Oklahoma drill today, whatever the heck. We called it Nutcracker. Okay, we have Nutcracker today. We're going to hit. It's like, I mean, after a couple of days worth of hitting, guess what? You get sore. You don't want to hit anymore. The only time you really want to hit is when you're actually playing in a game. So no one likes football practice.
And it's so hot down here, like in the summertime when it starts.
Oh, hey, I love covering camp. I think you know that I'm probably the only guy on this planet who enjoys covering training camp more than I actually do once we get into the regular season. I love full access. I love being able to watch everything and then talk to them after and then come in here and talk to you and not have to put everything under the win or lose category. That's what's so fun about covering this team during the off season. It's not identified with a win or a loss. And my, like you, I've been around here for way, way, way too many losses compared to wins. And it messes up your entire week if you're a diehard. Man, I feel for you on Monday morning. I really do. Getting up first thing like that and going to a job that you may not like and a personal life that you're struggling, okay, and that's your go-to. Give me the Jaguars on Sunday and they don't win and they stink up the joint. It's awful. Now, you haven't seen that the last couple of years. I'm with you. 9-8, playoff win, playoff loss. That's better. And it feels like it's getting better, right? I mean, better starting point now. I want to take a break, but I want to come back and get into this a little bit. Pro Football Focus, their grades, AFC South. You know, it's like you want to brag. You want to believe that it's all coming together, and then enter Pro Football. Pro Football Focus literally is gloom and doom. They are. Pro Football Focus should change their name to the Grim Reaper. Okay? Here you go. AFC South grades 1 week after free agency. Houston, an A. Tennessee, a B. Indianapolis, a B minus. Jacksonville, a C plus. Let's come back. We'll discuss on the other side.
Into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
0976 telling me that he would gladly take the freezing football practices. Grew up here, did 3 years of August 2 days in the late 70s. Old school, only one water break, no other breaks. Every day we prayed for rain. It was the only relief we could get because it made it less hot.
Sounds fun. And he forgot to put in there's like a 45-year-old man screaming his ass off at you.
Yeah. Both are miserable. I've been through both. It was hot in Boston in August. Don't kid yourself. Not as hot as here, but it was hot. Practicing in the cold is abysmal. Okay. October, November, high school in this old crappy rocky field. No jackets. You got to understand how old school our coach was. You think we could wear elbow pads or gloves? He thought he was Lombardi. He did. And, you know, I look back at it now and I almost laugh. Apparently you dealt with it as well. One water break. I mean, it's just amazing how stupid coaches were back then. That hydration was for sissies.
Yeah.
And there was you know what else there was no such thing of back then? Mental weakness. Mental health weakness. Okay, if you were just having a bad day, or if something was wrong, you were a sissy. You were weak. We didn't know that there were issues back then. It's amazing. I mean, honestly, today's athlete and today's youngster, at least there are ways to help out individuals. I mean, I know if you're driving around and you're a kid, or you know, you're in your teens or your 20s, or you listen with your mom and your dad, you probably don't understand this. That was the message that was being sent to kids, man. A water break? You're a sissy. Who the hell needs water? It's, man, the ignorance. Why did it take so long to discover that? I mean, we were landing people on the moon, right?
Allegedly.
We were landing people on the moon. We had the Manhattan Project that worked, you know, years prior to that. blowing up countries. Yet we couldn't even figure out that drinking water during practice is actually better for the athlete. Flying people where they can have, you know, flying people from L.A. to New York where they can have lunch in New York and get to Paris at night in time for dinner. But no, don't mix in a Gatorade. That's bad. Actually, by the time we got the Gatorade, we learned all about it. Or Powerade. I'm not one of those Knowles who's like, I refuse to say Gatorade. I do kind of love those type. But Florida State a winner again today, by the way. 19-0.
Yeah, 1-1, nothing.
Are the Knowles.
Gave up like two hits. And the Gators are down to JU in the ninth inning.
Ooh. Interesting.
In baseball, of course.
Yep. Love to dig up some of those old hockey coaches, some of those old football coaches, and just scream at them. You know? Have you ever read Bleachers, the John Grisham Bleachers?
Yeah, I have. It's a fictional book, right?
It is.
But it's you could tell it's based on
right
a lot of realism.
Been reading a lot of Grisham lately. The Bloxy Boys, almost finished that. Actually, I did finish that. What am I doing now? I'm doing CJ Box. Up Montana. They got a grizzly that's ripping everyone apart, grizzly bear. And then they created this fake grizzly bear that's doing hits on people. It's pretty in depth. You gotta check it out. Grisham's really good though. He is. 9266 Blue, love the hockey and wrestling talk. Start the show. Long live the Von Erichs, Dusty Rhodes, and the Goons. You looked it up, it's called Iron Claw.
Iron Claw. It came out last year.
Oh, last year.
2023 film. So I don't know if it like came out in select theaters. Yeah, late December 2023.
It's got the kid who played Bundy in it. Zac
Efron.
Yes. He did a good job playing Bundy.
He's great. And he was like a Disney actor guy.
Right. I saw him at something the other day. He was pretty good too. Oh, was that Ricky Stanicky. The comedy. Have you seen it yet?
No.
They create the fake friend as John Cena. Speaking of wrestling. Yeah, it's a great storyline. It's like three guys and they always lied about their fake friend. So they'd be like, oh my God, he just had a heart attack. We gotta fly out to Florida, you know, to go see him and all these. So they would use Ricky Stanicky as their go to.
Like to get out of stuff.
Right. Whenever they wanted to get away from their wives and go on like a boys trip. Well, the wives call him out on it, so they got to come up with a plan, and their plan is they hire John Cena, who's he's a perverted late-night performer that puts the big O into every song that he sings, okay? He's got, like, Alice Cooper and Brian and Billy Idol and all this. It's really pretty fun. I don't want to tell you any more if you haven't seen it, but they got to bring him to life in order to convince the wives that Ricky Stanicky is
actually existed this whole time. Have you seen Neighbors, where it's like a new family just moved in across the street from like a frat house?
Oh yeah,
and he's like the lead fraternity guy.
Isn't that with the guy who smokes the dope all the time?
Yeah,
the Canadian
Rogan,
Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen. Yeah, I did see that. That was a couple years ago. Yeah. Pretty good stuff.
10 years ago now. 2014,
really?
Right. Jeez.
I don't know what this guy's asking me here. 5348, boy, the MLB is a joke. Laughingstock of pro sports.
Wow.
Run by buffoons.
Oh, I agree with that. A buffoon.
Have you seen like who they're projecting to be the next commissioner? Far and away number one?
No.
Theo.
Oh, man, I would love that.
Theo Epstein.
Mean, he's always, they hired him to be like the, hey, take a look at the game and just tell us what the issues are and how we can fix them type guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that actually makes perfect sense. I would love that. I would welcome someone who actually cares and loves the game of baseball to be the commissioner of baseball as opposed to someone who it seems like doesn't even give a damn about the game.
Yeah. It would just... Good luck finding a commissioner who people except, right? I mean, I guess Greg Sankey. I mean, who else? We'll get to Jim Phillips perhaps next hour, you know, speaking all over the place today on Clemson, how, you know, he believes they have no claim here, and that's a rock solid argument. We just saw Jay Monahan lie in town last week. We saw Roger Goodell, who doesn't tell the truth. I mean, seriously, what is
Adam
the
Adam Silver? The shine on him has really come off, like in basketball.
They were loving him.
They like the first few years he was a media darling, and the last couple, whoa, the complete opposite.
But with Paul Tagliabue, you kind of got what you expected, all right? David Stern, they weren't perfect. I mean, I can go back to Bowie Kuhn and Bart Giamatti and what was the guy who died who banned Pete Rose? Oh, that was Giamatti, Bart Giamatti. You know, Bud Selig. But Bud Selig is remembered for two things. He's remembered for the Hall of Fame, you know, the All-Star tie, where I was at in Milwaukee,
Jesus.
And his self-righteous move of his Milwaukee Brewers, you know, switching up leagues. It was, he got everyone to sign
in
off on
it. In the steroid era, of course.
But he moved Milwaukee. Yes, but you know what? Bud did some pretty good things. He did the, you know, interleague play, which when it happened was, interleague play doesn't move the needle anymore. Okay, but when it happened, it was big.
You take it for granted now.
Right.
It used to be like, you know, obviously you would never see those teams play unless it was a World Series. And then when he brought it in, it was only like, okay, you'll play like maybe two series or three series a year. And now it's like you just every other, you know, series I feel like you're playing an American League team. It's crazy. I don't hate it.
No.
I don't love it, though.
Bud Selig was too self-serving, but he wasn't as bad. The thing that will he'll always be remembered for the All-Star tie, but he also was the man who oversaw the steroid era. That was on his doing. That was on his watch. But as bad as I remember getting on him big time, much better than Rob Manfred.
Oh my God, yes. I mean, 1998 really brought baseball back. And yeah, it was completely about roided up guys hitting homers in a contest against each other all year, but it was badass. Let me tell you, as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old kid, that season was off the chain.
It was incredible. David Lamb's son, Alex Lamb, we were in Chicago, I think it was 98.
Wow. Sosa.
And we were at some bars, but I'll never forget it because that was, we'd have to look back on it. That was Jacksonville at Chicago to open up the year. And I want to say that game was played on like the final day of August or like the first day of September. But the day before that, Notre Dame opened up with Michigan. And Notre Dame beat Michigan. And I want to tell you something. With Sosa and McGuire going head-to-head, Notre Dame knocking off Michigan, then the very next day, and that was when Curtis Enos was the first round, and that was back before the rookie slotted contracts. Curtis Enos held out because he wanted more money, and Chicago had a chance to win that game late in the fourth quarter, but he was out of shape, tapped himself out. They went to Jacksonville's Edgar Bennett, and the Jaguars had a goal line stand at Soldier Field in 1998, that was absolutely outstanding.
24-23. I have the highlights.
Bro, it was insane.
Right here.
It was insane.
And a 60-yarder. Now, look, with 5 seconds to go, Tom, what about a 7-yard out pattern in 3 seconds to give him a 50-50 out of
your kick? Certainly looking for a gain in between the 40 and the 35-yard line to line up and kick, try at least attempt that 52-yard field goal in lieu of the Hail Mary.
Well, Gabe must have felt that.
Good for the Jags, 1-0. Smith, 9 catches for 90 yards and a touchdown.
It was the hottest away game I've ever been at. That game in Chicago, okay? It was brutal. I mean, there was nothing coming off of Lake Michigan. And if you've ever been to Soldier Field, it is right on Lake Michigan. But boy, let me tell you, in that city at that time with that temperature, with Sosa, McGuire, and all the Notre Dame fans in that town, when they beat Michigan, and it was, I was like, oh my God, Chicago. And I ended up going to work there 2 years later for 7 years. I love my time in Chicago, but I wish I had more stories like that, because my thoughts of Chicago were like, you know, not seeing the sun for a month.
And now, oh my God, you bring up Chicago. That's not what you think about. But yeah, that was defending co-national champs Michigan in Notre Dame Stadium, 36-20.
What day was that played?
That was the...
last day of August?
Having a hard time finding it.
Okay.
Now.
It was insane. I mean.
But yeah. And you know what was great? By the way, so Chicago was up 20-17 against the Jags. 4 minutes left. The Jags had that goal line stand. So they had to kick the field goal and up six. And the Jags ended up going down the field. And Mark Brunell to number 32. Oh, to 82. Jimmy Smith touchdown to win the game.
Man, that was great.
And you know, here's the thing about, we have to take a break, but 1998 baseball season, the Cubs and the Cardinals weren't good.
They weren't good.
No,
but
like,
it didn't matter.
It didn't matter at all. Everyone had to watch every single at-bat. I believe, by the way, I could be wrong about this, but I think Sammy Sosa actually won the MVP. He didn't win the home run chase, but he won the MVP that year.
Now, let's take a break. My first time in Chicago was in 93 for the, you know, number one against number two, Florida State against Notre Dame, but it was cold and it was awful and the Noles lost and I thought Chicago sucked. Then I went back there in August of 98 and I was like, man.
This place is beautiful.
This place is incredible. So, yeah, there you have it. All right, much more to do with you tonight till 10.
Go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. What do you do
when you get home? Watching an old Sammy Sosa clip.
That was from this week.
That is from this
week.
He looks good.
He does.
Last time I saw him, he had like
bleached his skin or something. He looked crazy.
Yeah, he had like the Michael Jackson thing going.
He's got some color back.
So this video you sent me, this is from this week.
Yeah, dude. So he's being interviewed.
Oh, he looks good.
I don't know where, but somewhere in Chicago. Oh, by the way, I have an update on the Gator game.
What do you have?
JU's up 5-4, top of the ninth. Two outs, bases loaded for the Gators.
Okay.
I'll keep you updated. But
please,
yes.
Please do.
Sammy Sosa.
As a matter of fact, only come on here and tell me if JU wins.
Yeah.
If the Gators come behind and win, just feel free to
like
leave it off the air.
Sammy Sosa was, I guess, like talking about how him and the ownership. I'll just play it.
Yeah. Please do.
I'm reckless to sit down to get back into their good graces.
Well, like I say, you know, I'm a mature man. I think that it's a possibility that we can do that. I'm open. I don't have a problem with that. You know, I have a lot of misunderstanding in the past, but now I'm a real man. I feel great. So I recognize my mistake. So, hey, why not?
Are you telling me that you recognize the fact that maybe you did do steroids?
this is, like I say, this is not a question that I expected from you.
Oh my God. That was that pause right there.
He was
not expecting that.
This guy was so loved in Chicago. I mean, he would run out of that. For those who never watched the Cubs, they were on the third base bag, their dugout. And he would run across that diamond, man, and out to right field, and the place would go absolutely crazy.
He'd sprint.
And the steroids, they were fine with it. The corked bat, they were fine with it. What hurt Sammy Sosa is when the video surveillance showed him leaving early during one of the final days of the year. He just got up and left his teammates. And in a city like Chicago, You know, you talk about a loved guy who turned things around, you know, 180 with one move. That's Sammy Sosa. And, you know, when I left, he was nowhere near there. Now, it's been quite some time. I've been back here for, what, 18 years or so. It's not like I've stayed up on him. But typically, time heals all wounds. I wonder how they feel today about Sammy Sosa.
Based on the Twitter comments and stuff, everybody was defending him as opposed to the whoever that reporter is. But yeah, 15 years ago, that would have not been the case. By the way, JU was the one with the bases loaded. They had a single. Now they're up 7-4 in the top of the ninth.
Okay.
Gators, number 6 team in the nation. About to go down.
Hey, with some baseball, Florida State winner earlier today. They're now 19-0. They'll play next Tuesday right here in town. I just found out I'll be out there for it. We'll be doing our show.
Against
3-6.
UF?
Florida State, Florida. At the baseball grounds.
Love that.
Next Tuesday. How about Mookie Betts moving to shortstop? Okay? Mookie Betts is going to play. This
really?
Is a six-time Gold Glove right fielder who also has played more than 100 games at second base. He now has played more than 10 games at shortstop. You know, it's a big deal in baseball to go from left field to right field. How about Mookie Betts, as durable as he is, as great as he is, making this move for his team to play shortstop now as they get set to open up their season?
And last year, like, I thought a lot was made about him moving to second base.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause to me, first of all, he did play second base earlier in his career a little bit, but it's also not a very, I mean, easy for me to say. I'm not a Major League Baseball player, but, you know, I'm generalizing here. Second base is known as one of the easier positions to play, but shortstop is completely different.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that you have your best fielder at shortstop in center field, so he's expected to, the amount of range you have to have, and he has it. He's a freak athlete. He's super fast. Like, he was phenomenal at second last year. So I'm not going to be shocked if he's, you know, suddenly a middle of the road fielding shortstop, which would be crazy.
Man, the pressure on them this year to win with all the money they've spent and everything they've put together.
And the one World Series they did win was so fugazi. It was just, you know, a 60-game season.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing in the playoffs in like a neutral ground in Texas. It was just,
they could only use fugazi when you're talking about jewelry, whether it's real or a fugazi.
Well, I think I just used it there too. Oh, I've heard it in
really.
It
I thought it was
everywhere.
A mob. I thought it was a mob term. I thought it was for jewelry. I mean,
just
I'm learning
like
here tonight.
Fake or phony or yeah.
Okay.
Which I. If the Braves won that World Series that year, I would have counted it. But since it was the Dodgers, I got put a big asterisk next to it.
So, I mean, like say you used to date a girl, then all of a sudden she showed up a couple years later. Could you tap your buddy and say, hey, look at those fugazis?
I don't remember those.
Yeah. Bought and paid for. Who's the next husband who paid for those? 2809, got to see Iron Claw. It's maybe the saddest movie I've seen in 5 years, as you would imagine. I am well versed in the Von Erich family. And let me tell you something. When I grew up in Boston watching the WWF, it was before the WWE, and we would get, when cable came on the scene in early Abels, we got Gordon Solie and some Big South wrestling with Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and Tommy Rich and all that. But I don't know where it was. I think it was like the AWA then. I want to say like Nick Bockwinkel had the belt. But somehow we latched on the Von Erichs. And the Von Erichs came out with ZZ Top's LaGrange. And they took on like Terry Gordy and Michael Hayes and the fabulous Freebirds, and they had the Confederate flag, and they were wearing Confederate shorts, and they came out to Lynyrd Skynyrd's Freebird and all that, and it was like Texas-style wrestling. I don't know how we came up on it. I don't know. To this day, I don't know how we saw it. I mean, it was way before the internet, But somehow it pulled up somewhere on a cable television show or whatever. And, you know, my brother loved the Von Erichs. And, of course, like everything else in life, I immediately gravitated to the bad guys. I wanted the Fabulous Freebirds. I wanted Terry Gordy. And I wanted, you know, I always rooted for the bad guys. And Terry Gordy is another one who died way. I bet he died 20 years ago, for crying out loud. He would have been lucky to live to the age of 40, would have been Terry Gordy. Man, that's what it comes down to for these guys. And it includes Chris Simon, who, you know, passed last night, apparently taking his own life. Where's the risk reward of being front page news, being a superstar for a period of time, but then it all goes away and you're dead way before you are supposed to be? You know, the whole only the good die young or whatever. I guess it's better to be a has been than a never was. I don't know. I'd much rather live a long life. I'd much rather, scream at the clouds.
In obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Sad. I am going to watch that, though. Iron Claw, appreciate that tip. Get quite a few people who've chimed in on that tonight. So Mookie played 88-10. Mookie played shortstop coming up. Yeah, he did play some middle infield coming up. There's no doubt. Absolutely, he did. It's happened with a lot of guys. I remember when the Red Sox traded Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson. They got 26 and a third innings out of him in 1988. Jeff Bagwell came up as a third baseman.
Wow, speaking of steroids.
And they moved him because they had Wade Boggs. But yeah, I mean, we talked about the late Tim Wakefield. Just when,
yeah,
unfortunately, he passed.
I didn't even know he was a fielder.
He was an everyday player. And his game was gone. But he could throw a knuckleball. And then
we know what happened.
Yeah.
A 20-year career.
He won 200 big league games. Someone says, what about Buddy Roberts? Yeah, he was the third. Forgot about him. He was the third Freebird. Fugazi was a legendary punk band.
Oh.
Well, will you find some out of our next break here?
Absolutely.
Don't we owe at least one more?
Yeah, we have to take two more breaks.
Yeah, let's do that. We've been this long-winded tonight. It's our final late-night Tuesday show. As far as you know. No, I shouldn't say that. The correct way for me to say it is next Tuesday I'll be on 3 to 6, but it is the final time ever that we will play, sadly, the Phillips Highway Stroll.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I am a patient boy. I wait. My time's the one that's got a train. Everybody move. Please don't leave me to remain.
Gotta catch you. It's due for Tuesday, including Fugazi in their hit song. Look at those two Fugazis. Are they real or not?
This would be actually Waiting Room. And it has 13 million views on YouTube. So.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
Someone said you used to play here at the Milk Bar. I think one thing we can appreciate about punk rockers is that they're angry at everyone, right? They don't
discriminate,
right? You know, they just hate. They hate all. So there you go. Post odds after week one of the Super Bowl, week one of free agency, Kansas City and San Francisco 6-1. The Jaguars 40-1. So, again, I was going to get into this a little bit earlier, but we kind of drifted away on a few other things. Pro Football Focus ranked Houston a week after free agency, gave them an A. with the moves they made. And they did make some good moves. I mean, the one I really liked was Jeff Okuda, okay? And they got him for 1 year, $4.75 million. I mean, what are we missing there? They brought back Desmond King. So they got a couple of corners. They went out and they signed Mike Ford as a corner. They got Danico Autry on that defensive line. Well, here's the big signing. Foley Fatakusai, okay? Or Foley Fatakusi, excuse me, the signing there. They made the trade for Joe Mixon, and then they gave a lot of money to Danielle Hunter. So they really did a lot of things with their defense. It almost feels as though they like what they have offensively, even though they made the move for Joe Mixon. But all of a sudden, taking Hunter now and put him on the other side of Will Anderson Jr. and getting Danico Autry, that's going to create some interesting problems for the Jaguars' offensive line. Did you see today as well, Mike Williams, $15 million he can make with the New York Jets if he hits all his incentives. That guy was being mentioned. He was released late last week. There was a little bit of talk around here as to whether or not, you know, Jacksonville would kick the tires. Maybe they did. Not aware of it. But
I'm always skeptical when I see worth up to as the only part of the headline.
Right.
Like, well, what is it, really?
Tennessee gave Tony Pollard $24 million over three. I don't know how much of that is guaranteed, but obviously they said goodbye to Derrick Henry. They went to a younger back. And, you know, they gave all that money to Calvin Ridley. They went out, signed a backup quarterback in Mason Rudolph. They didn't do much outside of that. They got Lloyd Cushenberry. Okay, my bad. They got the center. Remember talking about him a great deal. So they got an anchor for that offensive line. And, you know, they got really high grades. They got a B+. Jackson only got a C+. Didn't make a tremendous amount of moves. Got themselves a linebacker in Kenneth Murray. They got themselves a guard. I don't believe he's a starter in Sadiq Charles. I don't think he's a starter. So, some interesting stuff there. Again, this is all according to Pro Football Focus. Take it for what it is. They gave Jacksonville a C+. Indianapolis, they gave a straight A. Boy, they got a really good football player, linebacker Zaire Franklin. Man, is he good. They brought back Michael Pittman. Okay. They spent a lot of money on a corner in Kenny Moore. They spent a lot of money on linebacker Ronnie Harrison. They spent a one-year contract on Joe Flacco. Let's see. What else? Raekwon Davis, a two-year deal as a defensive lineman. Maybe I'm missing something here. Why are the great Tyquan Lewis, 2 years, $12 million off the edge? Why so much better? Franklin's a really good football player. Bringing back Pittman, I guess that's part of their free agency. They're talking about bringing back their own. I wonder how much things would have changed if Jacksonville brought back Calvin Ridley. I wonder where that C+ would have gone. Maybe a straight B. You know, take it for what it is. Another thing that's really interesting is I keep reading about Brian Thomas out of LSU coming to the Jaguars at 17. He ran a 4.34. Man, I've seen his height all the way from 6'2 to 6'2.5, 6'3, 6'4. I looked it up today. His measurement at the combine was 6'3", 209. So that's a bigger body. I like that. I still not a huge fan of anything outside of the offensive line at 17, although it just feels like the more and more we move through this process and we get closer to the NFL draft, that they're not going to go with the offensive line. I want to take do we have to take one more?
We do.
Yeah, let's take one more break. I want to, maybe I'll say this for tomorrow. I want to give a couple of updates on some Florida State weight gain as their spring ball began today. DJ Uiagalelei, 255 pounds, man. That is nuts. And he's been consistent with that. I just didn't know he was that big. The freshman Cam Davis up to 221. He's going to get a lot of footballs this year. I think a lot of that will be determined on the transfer, Roydell Williams from Alabama. Of course, you still have Lawrence Toa-Fili, who's up 8 pounds to 196. But there's one guy I want to talk about. We'll save that on the other side. We've got much more to do. Take it tonight till 10 o'clock, then it's Hacker Nation.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Takes his time. About to check outside the game.
All right, hopefully they play this in Iron Claw. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, but that'll be my first memory of the Von Erichs when they took on the fabulous Freebirds. Some great Texas wrestling. Congratulations to JU. They knock off the University of Florida 7-6 tonight. Florida State a winner. They go to 19-0 in their midweek game. Next week, next Tuesday, we'll all be at the baseball ground. So it'll be Florida State, Florida, right here in Jacksonville playing baseball. So that should be a lot of fun. All right, I've given you a couple of heights and weights with Florida State spring ball getting underway officially today. We'll have some guests on. Niall Lawrence Stample later in the week. Next week, we'll have a writer or two on. I want them to hit. I want them to fully have pads on until we start bringing some of those folks on. But the most impressive thing for me is Patrick Pate. Okay, he's gone from 239 to 254. That is a massive weight gain. That's a 15-pound weight gain. And this kid's got NFL written all over him. I made the point a year ago that I thought when it was all said and done, Patrick Payton's going to be a better NFL player than Jared Verse. Most of you out there would argue with that point. And that's fine. I'm just looking at the shape, the size, the frame of Patrick Payton. This is a guy who has the ability to put even more weight on. And love the fact that he's up to 254. I would like to see Lamont Green Jr. put on some weight. He's only up to 227. He did nothing a year ago. It was absolutely a red shirt for him. He's a legacy. His dad was a great, you know, inside linebacker at Florida State. He was USA Today and, oh, I don't know, 94, 95. He's got to add weight. He's only put on 4 pounds. He's got from 223 to 227. So it just may be too much to ask out of him to get anything coming off the edge weighing at 227. Marvin Jones Jr., the son of the great Shade Tree. Marvin Jones, of course, spent his first 2 years at Georgia. He's gone from 250 to 257. So I hope that that's pretty good weight as well. The linebacker position, I think, is the biggest concern on this football team. If you get away from whether or not DJ Uiagalelei is really the guy, and also experience at wide receiver, right? Got some names there, even familiar names there, but you don't have a lot of receptions on that receiving core. The linebacker position is the biggest concern that I have. Blake Nicholson, 215 to 220, still undersized. Omar Graham really struggled a year ago. He's gone from 225 to 228. Yeah. You know, we're talking 5 pounds. We're talking 3 pounds. DJ Lundy down 244 to 240. The kid they got out of Bama, Sean Murphy, 225 to 226. I have a little trepidation. I know they play the 4-2-5, but they had such consistency with those starting linebackers last year. You know, Florida State really did. Those two played sensational football. So we'll see what ends up happening. I want to get one more of these in before we bring in Hacker Nation. The 1867 says Ballou. Yada yada. It's 17. If Verse and Bowers are both available, who would you pick? I'd pick Verse. I would. I think it's a far more important position. You can never have enough defensive linemen. Verse is a guy who did much more than just rush the quarterback. He's a guy that can play all three downs for you. And as good as Brock Bowers is, you just use the second-round pick on Brenton Strange. You're going to have to put it on him this year. He's going to have to make some plays for you. It'll be year two of the new deal for Evan Engram. He's got at least a couple of years left. Okay, and he's your pass catcher. And you're also in the final year of a contract for Luke Farrell, who has been primarily, you know, your blocking tight end. You hope that Brenton Strange can take some snaps away from Luke Farrell and become more of a blocking tight end. But also, when you use a second-round pick on him, he needs to start to make some plays. And you know, watching him practice and you know, seeing what he did at Penn State, he should be able to progress. I think one thing that is evident is, you know, the trust value for Trevor Lawrence. Okay, and I know things went a little sideways when Zay went out, when Christian Kirk went out. You know, many more balls this year for Evan Engram, many more balls this year out of the backfield for ETN. But he is going to hopefully go to his, you know, primary target or his second target. Once you get through that and you start to talk about protection of the line and you know, how long is he going to be able to stay back there, that's been a problem as well. But I do believe that there's going to have to be some plays designed this year for Brenton Strange. He's going to have to be the target with some routes. I think a lot of people right now, if you were to really get a – if you were to measure, you know, what he's done and what they believe he can do, it would probably be a thumbs down in town. And I haven't spoken as much about him because you do have those three other guys, or, you know, the two other guys that are at that position, where I find myself more and more and more talking about the third round pick and Tank Bigsby. But that is absolutely a huge part of everything that is going on right now with us moving closer to the NFL draft and for Trent Baalke this year not to get a Brenton Strange or a Tank Bigsby in the second and third round, guys who barely contributed to the team a year ago. You have to get guys this year in those draft slots who do contribute to this football team, and you have to get those two guys to really pick up their play. And you can include both fourth-round picks. You know, Miller was out all year with the injury, and Tyler Lacy didn't do an awful lot. You know, he was just kind of a guy who got an opportunity here, an opportunity there. So, you know, say what you want. We saw Anton Harrison. He's only going to get better. The next four picks are all going to be counted on this year to do more and more compared to what they obviously did as rookies. All right, it's time for Hacker Nation right here on your home of the Jaguars. What is going on?
Rick, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Doing really good today. You?
Yeah, good. Watched a little of the NCAA tournament. Didn't get a whole lot bigger than Howard and Wagner to kick things off there in Dayton. We're now down to 67 as I saw Wagner with the big 71-68 victory. I was talking to Denmark. The selection show was like 48 hours ago. These teams are told they're going to Dayton, and Howard's out here on Tuesday night at 9:30. Yeah. It's unreal how quick it happens.
It really does.
And now I think Colorado State, Virginia is another game. And then tomorrow night, actually, as Florida fans should probably show some interest there, is they'll get the winner of Boise State and Colorado.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Florida had to play, what, four games in 4 days?
Four games in like 63 hours.
They catch a break on the flip side of this, though, having the winner of this late night game, too. Where is this? It's in Dayton as well.
Dayton.
But it's at 9 o'clock tomorrow night. All right, so I'm going to have the Philly Rooster on. We won't know who Florida who their opponent officially is when I have him on tomorrow night, but you're going to get the winner of Colorado and Boise State. Regardless of what those set of circumstances are, Florida's going to be favored in that game. You think they should be able to win it?
I would think so, although Colorado's got a couple of guys that may be in the NBA someday. Here's my thoughts on the Gators. I think it's already been a successful year. They're back in the tournament. They had the injury to the center, Hanlocked. And to me, Rick, you win on Friday night. Everything else after that is gravy. Because odds are you're a 7 playing a 2 in Marquette in the round of 32, and you're going to be an underdog in that one. So I'm not going to be upset, and I don't think Gator fans should be upset if they get knocked out on Sunday. I think they'll probably be a little disappointed if they get knocked out on Friday. But, again, to me, after Friday, if you win, everything else is gravy at that point.
All right. What's coming up tonight?
Obviously, we'll do a lot of NCAA tournament talk. We will talk some Gator basketball, a little NFL talk as well. As look, I didn't get into this last night, but absolutely insane, the quarterback first-round class of 2021.
Oh, it's nuts.
Trevor Lawrence is the lone wolf standing. Zach Wilson's going to be out of New York. Fields is gone out of Chicago. Mac Jones is out of New England. And Trey Lance is out of San Francisco. That might go down as the worst first-round quarterbacks that have ever been drafted in a single draft.
It's fair. It really is.
We're talking 36 months, and four of those five guys are already out of their teams that drafted.
Yeah, they've already moved on to a different opportunity. I don't think anyone really believes that any of them are really going to turn things around.
Justin Fields was an interesting – I mean, he wasn't terrible. Yet, for whatever reason, it's like I don't know what happened there. There's got to be more to that. That was odd to me. That was bizarre the way that they couldn't get anything for Justin Fields.
Yeah, and you know, whether it's Mac Jones here or Fields there, what's interesting to me is obviously neither one of these two organizations are going to pick up the fifth-year rookie and pay him $25 million. But you're going to be facing a situation now, and I would look at it more in Pittsburgh than certainly here, where if you think Justin Fields is part of your future, we'll see what Russell Wilson gives you. You have to turn around and sign him to a brand-new deal in a year.
Right. Yeah, that's a big one. And apparently, Fields wanted to go to Pittsburgh, so Chicago accommodated him. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But that's just one of the interesting stories that has transpired thus far in the NFL offseason.
All right, have a lot of fun tonight.
Thanks, Rick.
There he goes. That's Hacker Nation, and that's going to do it for us. I do not check the text line any longer now that the show is over. But if you want to get a hold of me, you can always get me on Twitter or X, whatever it is you prefer to call it. That is Blue1010XL. Tomorrow night, the rest of the week, we're with you 3 until 6. That'll be the case Wednesday, Thursday out at Mr. Chubby's Wings in Fleming Island, and Friday as well, 3 until 6 o'clock. 6 until 8 o'clock. I don't know. I just don't know anymore. They're coming to take me away. They're coming to take me away.